From a transmitter atop Great Blue Hill, this is WGBH, live, local talk, Boston Public Radio.
He's Jim Browdy. I am Marjorie Egan. This is Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH.
Hey, Marjorie Egan, can I vent for 2 minutes about two deadlines so I can get them out of my system?
Certainly, Jim.
Thank you.
It's what you like to do best.
Thank you. The first deadline is today. You know, this much talked about, actually, I would argue too much talked about, signature collection deadline, if you want to run for the United States Senate. It has been used as a convenient excuse, don't make a look at me like this, by candidates to avoid interviews. Would you agree, come tomorrow when the signatures are submitted to local officials, there are no more excuses, yes?
You know, I think maybe a little introspection is needed here, Jim.
What does that mean?
Maybe it's you they don't want to be interviewed by.
No,
other people seem to be having less problems than you are.
Okay, fine. Let's go to the second deadline. The second deadline is this sequester thing, which is Friday. The cuts kick in Friday, at least begin to. Not only is Congress doing virtually nothing about this, but the thing that I am most amazed by, and this is anecdotal, not scientific, is it seems to me the vast majority of the public, either because they're so used to dysfunction in Washington or they believe that the Obama administration is crying wolf, virtually nobody seems to care about this. Is that a fair statement or not? I don't get the sense that people are up in arms worried that their Medicare is going to be cut or they're going to be fewer traffic controllers and that sort of thing.
I don't know. I think if you get your kid in Head Start, you're pretty worried about it. And I think if you're on unemployment and you're going to take a big whack in your check, I think you're pretty concerned about it. I think people are afraid about it. They're just not sure what's actually going to happen. I think we like to think the government's going to bail us out at the last minute. At least we used to think that. And they're still hoping, you know, despite recent experience.
I think you're the Pollyanna. By the way, on our Facebook page, and you can post there too, by the way. You can go to facebook.com/Boston Public Radio. Edmund had this to say, which I sort of like. It costs about $3 million per day based on a five-day week in congressional salaries, health, and retirement benefits. I say we start there. Stop those checks first and see how fast inaction becomes action. And whatever happened with the likes of the Reagan-era Grace Commission report, which cut waste without services.
Ooh,
all good points.
That's
so
a great idea.
Okay, I'm feeling a little bit better. I can breathe easier. In a minute, we're going to be joined by a Boston Globe reporter to discuss this. That is Marjorie, by the way, performing one of her finest hits.
That's,
you know, before
right.
we get our friend from the Globe who's been covering this thing, we'll tell briefly. So from our former radio lives, there's an older woman who calls our show. What does she say, Marjorie?
Well, she calls and she's very concerned. She's riding shotgun right behind the driver in the first seat. And she claims
at that moment, she is on a Fanghua bus.
On her cell phone from the bus saying, he's going like 95 miles an hour. He doesn't speak English. I'm scared to death. Can you please call the state police?
And we're laughing.
And have the bus pulled over. I think it could be, it's not looking good for the Fanghua buses.
No, it's not. So actually, if you plan to take the Fanghua to New York City this morning, you're out of luck. If you have in the past, by the way, share your experiences with us at 877-301-8970. Again, that's 877-301-8970. And while you do, we're joined by Globe travel and tourism reporter Katie Johnson, who's been chronicling the rise and fall of Fanghua. How you doing, Katie?
I'm doing well. How
great,
are you guys?
Great.
It's like the Peyton plays of bus companies or something. Katie, what's going on the latest over there at the beleaguered Fanghua Bus Company?
Well, finally, late last night, the management of South Station got Fanghua to shut down operations altogether. And they ran a bus after they told them to cease operations about 8 o'clock. But then by 9:30, I guess they had posted a sign and said they'd suspended operations. And that seems to be holding fast.
Well, the thing is, you read through their history, and we're talking endless numbers of speeding violations. You had the whole thing about, what was it, the axles? What was falling apart in the buses, please, Katie Johnston?
Well, the frames, the Department of Public Utilities found a bunch of cracks in the frames, in the drive axles and in the engine cradles. And this all started on February 7th. They went and inspected four of the buses and found three of them had these substantial cracks. So they ordered them all out of service. Although apparently Fanghua didn't comply with the order and they continued to operate them, so they went back and inspected more buses, and they found problems in 8 out of 9 buses. And then so they told him, all right, so you have to take all of your buses that were built before 2005 off the road, which was 21 out of its total fleet of 28. So they did that as of Saturday. Then the state sent a letter to the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration asking them to shut down Fenghua. And yesterday, the feds declared Fenghua operations an imminent hazard, ordered the company to stop operating its entire fleet until it could be inspected and repaired. But the bus company continued to operate using charter buses, although nobody seems to know how or if these charter buses are being inspected. So then finally yesterday, the managers at South Station got involved and ordered Fenghua to halt all operations.
Well, you know, it's been weeks since any of them caught on fire or turned over. You know, we're laughing about this thing, Katie, but the thing that is amazing is I'm listening to you go down.
People are still taking the bus. That's why I'm laughing.
Well, not that
it's
bus.
It's unbelievable.
No, but
well,
let me just go here.
Buses.
The thing that's upsetting me is when you chronicle the numbers of buses with either broken axles or some serious physical problem, then by definition, people, mostly young people, but people were riding these buses with these horrible conditions. Where have these inspectors been all these months or whatever while these problems obviously have existed? Where have they been?
Well, they say they do these random inspections, you know, every – South Station said they do them every couple of weeks, and obviously they can't do the whole fleet every couple of weeks, but they say they get to them the whole fleet every year.
Meaning they contend that every single – I have to take my car every year for an inspection, and they look at stem to stern, everything. Is the contention that these inspectors examine every bus like that at least once a year? Is that what they're saying?
That's what they say. I don't know the extent of the inspection, but hopefully, yes, they're looking at everything stem to stern, like you say.
Do you ever ride one of these things?
I have.
What was that like?
How'd it go, Katie?
You sit next to a live a chicken in a cage? How was that?
Sadly, I miss the chicken days, but I did ride on some, and they do drive fast, and some of them don't speak English. And once we were pulled over for speeding when I was on the bus, and the bus driver and the cop got into a very interesting yelling match, one in Chinese, I'm assuming, and one in English.
Yeah, you know, is it too much to ask that the driver, it basically with the stop and go and the basic signs you have to be able to read on the highway, can speak English? I don't think that's too much to ask. Our number is 877-301-8970. If you have ever taken a Fenghua bus, I don't know why you would anymore, especially with the competition from the Bolt bus and the Mega bus and stuff like that.
Lucky Star.
Parents, do you want your kids that are in college going back and forth between Boston and New York and the Fenghua bus? You know, Katie, I thought things had improved for Fenghua because they had a banner year in 2007. This is all in a period of about 6 weeks. On January 3rd, the bus lost its two back wheels. This is great.
Right.
On the way to New York. And then a couple of weeks later, the driver of another New York-bound bus lost control and hit the guardrail on the Mass Pike in Austin. Remember we had pictures of it up in the guardrail? It was kind of listing to the left or to the right or something. Then, right after that, they had another New York-bound bus got stuck on a concrete barrier in front of the toll booth once again on the Mass Pike. I mean, you see these buses on the Mass Pike, you think it's only a matter of time before they're like driving right through the tolls.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing. I mean, they haven't had any in the last 2 years anyway. They haven't had any crashes, so maybe they're doing a little better, but still obviously their buses are not in great shape. I mean, they've cited like 23 times for these cracked, loose or broken frames over 2 years, and that's not counting the recent inspections of the last few weeks.
Hey, Katie, we're going to get to calls in a second, but is there, I don't want to cast aspersions on anybody else unfairly, but there are other low-cost carriers like Marjorie mentioned earlier. There's Bolt, there's Lucky Star, there are a ton of these things. Have inspections been done there? Are the inspectors saying that they've cleared them, or we just have to hold our breaths? What's the deal?
Oh, sure. I mean, they're doing these random inspections all the time. And, I haven't looked into all these other lines, but I'm assuming since they haven't asked any of them to stop their operations that they're doing okay. You know, and there a lot of them are more reputable. You know, you can even take Greyhound and Peter Pan one way for $13 now. You know, that's one thing that Fenghua kind of pioneered was this low-cost service between the two cities, and now everybody's falling in line. So there's plenty of other alternatives.
We're talking to Katie Johnson, travel and tourism reporter for the Boston Globe. Margaret comments on the Boston Public Radio Facebook page, quote, "My son was on a bus ride so bad that people were yelling, 'Hey, you were driving people, not chickens.'" Let's go up to Salem, where Jen is on the phone on Boston Public Radio. Hey, Jen.
Hi, how are you?
Hey, fine.
Great. What's going on?
Jen?
So my husband and I lived in New York from 2004 to 2006, and he's originally from Rockport. So anytime that we wanted to come up to Boston to visit family, we would take the Fenghua. He was a Teach for America teacher at the time. I worked in publishing, so cost was definitely an issue. And we would take these Fenghua bus trips, and, I mean, just comical. They were never without incident.
One time,
I remember I was by myself, I think, and the couple in front of me got off at the rest stop because they typically make a stop so you can get food if you're taking an evening drive. And they also didn't speak English, and so they didn't understand that you needed to go get your food at the rest stop and get back on the bus very quickly. And so they drove off without them.
Like, catch your next bus, Jen. It's not that big a deal.
But we had to turn around and go back and pick them up. Another time, the bus, I believe this was with my husband, they failed to stop at a way station, and so they were pulled over and rerouted. Another time, a bus caught fire.
So wait a second, but Jen, stop here. But the interesting part of the story to me is not what happened to Feng Hua. You and your husband continued to ride Feng Hua, did you not?
I know. And I have to say, towards the end of our time in New York, the Lucky Star and the other bus companies started to get a little bit more popular, and so we started to do the alternatives. But it was one of those things we really had to psych ourselves up for, and we just kept saying to our families, like, we really love you, that we are putting up with these 8-hour trips from New York to Boston.
Right, and if we never see you again, remember how we cared about you.
If we never see you again, we perish on the Fong Hua.
Well, you're,
hey, Jen, thanks for the call.
We appreciate
it. You're a
brave person, Jen. You know, the Laurel Sweet from the Herald went to interview passengers about to get in the Fong Hua bus yesterday.
Yep.
And they were unbelievably philosophical about this. Grace Mateo from Brooklyn says, well, you just take your chances. Stephen Smith from Newton says, hopefully, we'll get there.
Hey, Katie.
We'll get there.
Is it understood this shutdown is a temporary kind of deal until Feng Hua gets its act together, or is the word in the inspection community that Feng Hua has driven its last ride?
You know, so right now it's temporary. You know, it's unclear when or if they'll start operating again. They need to make substantial repairs to these buses, and I imagine they'll be closely watched by the state and federal authorities. I mean, the feds could decide to revoke their license altogether, but right now it's unclear which way they'll go.
If you have experienced a terror ordeal on a Feng Hua bus, please call us 877-301-8970. Well, that's what it is,
it's
actually.
It's like redundant to say a terror ordeal on a Feng Hua bus.
And from Boston, what happened to you?
Hi. I actually have a positive story about the Feng Hua.
Oh, good.
I've ridden the Feng Hua probably 20 to 25 times in 2012 and have had zero bad experiences.
Wow.
I have heard of all the bad stories and have kind of expected possibly for one to happen, but I've had a really great experience with being able to bring my bike on the bus as I bike in New York and in Boston when I go between the both. And most other bus companies charge you for that, and the Feng Hua puts you in the front of the line if you have a bike. And
Now that you're Feng Hua deprived, at least temporarily, how are you going to get back and forth? What are you going to do? What's the alternative?
Well, there is a Lucky Star. They're usually late. Mm-hmm. And then the rest of the bus and train industry, personally, I think is a little bit monopolized and is quite expensive. So those 20 to 25 rides have been much more expensive.
Well,
Anne,
thank you for the call. And I think you were fortunate to be able to get your bicycle on the Feng Hua bus because in 2004, a blind couple with their guide dog could not get the guide dog onto the bus, even after the cops came and explained that they were allowed to take the guide dog on. They were sued for discrimination. And needless to say, the Feng Hua bus company lost. Katie, I think that we need to have sort of a big investigative story here where a Globe reporter or a Herald reporter spends like 3 days back and forth.
Believe me, that's been suggested, and I've been trying to get away from that.
Yeah, you have to up your life insurance before you go.
Exactly. It would be interesting, but right, yeah, exactly. I'd need a little liability insurance.
Let's go down to Braintree, where Eileen is on Boston Public Radio at 877-301-8970. Hey, Eileen.
Thank you for taking my call.
Pleasure.
I took the bus in 2005. We went down to Central Park to see the gates. I don't know if you remember. They were all draped in orange.
Oh, yeah.
But anyhow, we got all right going down. Coming back at 5 o'clock, we got on the bus. We didn't make it back to Boston until midnight.
Mm. Oh, so do tell. What happened?
The snow developed. The driver didn't speak English. And the worst part is when you get on the bus, you take whatever seat you can get. So we had the last seat, and the toilet was overflowing, and the
beautiful.
Door would not stay closed.
That's great.
Gosh.
And I thought we were going to be asphyxiated.
Yeah.
And everyone was holding their nose. We kept complaining to the driver. He didn't understand us.
Or at least so he said. I mean,
yeah.
That's the oldest trick in the book.
Yeah.
And coming from Braintree, we took the T in. So if we don't get back to South Station by midnight, we can't get back without taking a cab to Braintree because our car's in Braintree.
We don't have to worry. There's no Fungwa bus anymore, at least for the time being.
Oh, my God.
Eileen,
thanks for the call.
Remember the stories about the people actually, I forget if they have live chickens in the back of the bus.
Were they cooking chickens in the back of the bus? Well, there was a woman called us one day
and
said they had a hibachi. I think that was a joke. But a lot of people talk about live chickens. They really do.
You know, make it more festive, I guess. It's kind of a picnic atmosphere on the Mass Pike on the way.
So, Katie, Katie Johnson, Boston Globe reporter who's been all over this, essentially to end this, we just sit and wait until the inspectors clear them or Fungwa decides they're not going to operate anymore. But essentially, we wait for them next. Is that not the case? The government?
Yes.
I mean, yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Should we be hoping for them to come back, Katie, or is it best just to have kind of a requiem here for the Fungwa bus? What do you think?
Well, it makes for interesting stories. And there are those writers, as you noted, who do like to take their chances.
Yeah.
I don't know why, because seriously, every other company offers the same price. I mean, even I looked today online, Greyhound and Peter Pan, very reputable companies, it's $2 less to take them.
Hey, before you go away, can I ask you, Katie, one last question we should have asked because a number of people talked about this. Is there not some regulation or statute that requires that a driver, what are they called, a public convenience, is that what those things are, of a public bus must speak English? Is that a required thing?
Yes, and they have been cited, they've been cited 6 times in the last 2 years for failure to speak English, but obviously it might be more widespread than that.
Yeah, I think they get around it by not getting licenses. I think that's the trick.
Well, and some of them have been, it was 6 times for failure to speak English or operate without a commercial driver's license, so they found some of their drivers don't even have a commercial driver's license.
You know, what the heck? You know, a little teeny tiny car, hey, Toyota, or a big bus, what's the difference?
Before we leave this, my hometown of Cambridge, John is calling in. John, what was your experience? Hey, John. Here he comes. John, you're on Boston Public Radio with Jim and Marjorie. Hey, John.
Hey. My story was that the driver was driving his bus with one hand, eating his lunch with the other, and talking all the while on his cell phone.
What was he holding his cell phone with? He had a Bluetooth or what?
He had one of these earpiece things.
At least he had the earpiece.
Yeah, the main thing I'm saying is that Fung Wong is playing this Catch Me If You Can game. And the way to do it is not just to have a whole bunch of inspectors. The thing is that they have to prove that they're capable of running a bus company, and if not, they're shut down. I mean, that's the way FAA runs.
Yeah, but John, they've gotten away with this. What are they? Were founded, Katie, in 1996 for 15 years. We keep reading these stories, and they've gotten away with it.
Nobody shuts them down.
Yeah.
What kind of sandwich was he eating, John?
Didn't notice.
Okay, John, thank you so much for the call.
He was having a steak, and he had a knife in one hand and a fork in the other hand.
Hey, Katie Johnson, you've been doing great work on this. Keep us apprised of the latest with Fungwa, if you will.
Thanks a lot. We'll do.
Thank you very much, Katie Johnson. Katie covers travel and tourism from the Boston Globe, and we very much appreciate her being here. Up next, another threshold crossed in transgender acceptance, and incredibly, it happened at a frat house. That's coming up on 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio. Listening to Boston Public Radio with Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. After complaining on air yesterday that we'd taken her job, and I think she may have keyed my car, by the way, we decided we couldn't take her whining anymore.
Thank you.
So you're welcome. So joining us to talk about how a fraternity at Emerson College, this is a great story, raised money to pay for a frat brother's gender transition surgery after the insurance company said no, as publisher of Bay Windows and the South End News. Of course, that is Sue O'Connell. Hey, Sue.
Hey, hi. Great to be here. It's a happy feeling.
You know what was a very encouraging story about this young man that was born a girl, Donnie, and now his Emerson Fraternity College brothers have raised money, $14,000 to date, for his gender transition surgery. The Herald's a conservative paper. Front page of the Herald, written by Katie Eastman. The comments on our paper and lots of papers can be really, really vicious.
Yes, I know.
I was stunned when I read these comments. There were some vicious ones, but there were a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you know what? The government's not asking this. They're raising the money privately. If he wants to be, if he was born a girl, wants to be a boy, as long as I'm not paying for it. I was amazed at how progressive the people that you think are living in their basement and typing out these horrible, vicious emails were.
The issue with the transgender rights and transgender progress is similar in the same way to gay and lesbian progress, in that parents are starting to realize that children are born this way,
yeah.
You know, and there are a lot. There's a great story of a family up in Maine, you know, a blue collar dad. The child was not allowed to go to school. All sorts of, you know, havoc because the child identified and is transgender, male to female. And parents get this. They, you know, your kids. You look at your kids. Your kid is 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. No matter what your political viewpoint is, you understand that it might be, you know, an issue with the way the child is made, you know, and might be in the wrong body. The brain might be female. The body might be male. And again, to your point, the government's not paying for
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
You know, and this is, and to the kids' credit at Emerson, I mean, obviously Emerson, I'm an Emersonian. It's a progressive school in terms of politics by the nature of the type of business that many of the students go on to work in. But still, you know, a fraternity saying that this
yeah.
is fine.
You know, I was in a fraternity years ago, and it was the most embarrassing year of my life.
No,
I'm not going to regale you with anything.
Grotesque fraternity stories.
Well, it is Emerson. It's Emerson.
Well, it is Emerson. It's not University of Texas.
Yeah. If you guys have not heard this clip, it is so hard. And this is a fundraising video these three Emerson fraternity brothers made for this prospective brother's gender-related surgery. And by the way, you can hear it and see it on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Boston Public Radio. Listen to this thing.
We're reaching out to you today because one of our prospective brothers is transgender. He was born a female but now self-identifies as a male. A couple of days ago, we found out as a fraternity that his insurance denied him the opportunity to get top surgery. So we as an organization and individuals in that organization have taken it upon ourselves to raise that money for him. We're looking to raise $4,800, and we're trying to do that through this social media campaign. But we want to let people know that it's a very different sort of campaign we're trying to run here. We're looking to tell a story more so than raise money. We'd much rather have 100 people donate $10 than 10 people donate $100.
Yeah, my fraternity brothers at Penn would have been doing that. By the way, that's on our Facebook page again. But you mentioned the government's not doing it. And by the way, give us a buzz, 877-301-8970. The reason this happened, that they had an opportunity to be as selfless as they were, these frat brothers, is because private insurance turned down this request for coverage. Should private insurance cover transgender surgery? It seems to me that what poisoned the well on this, and I'm actually shocked, is this Kosolek thing.
Sure.
The guy murdered his wife.
Mm-hmm.
He's in jail, convicted of
bad
murder,
guy.
And a horrible guy. And a good judge, I would argue, declares that he is entitled as a medical necessity to have the state pay for transgender surgery. Deval Patrick has appealed that. He thinks that's not the law. And we get calls on our prior show.
Right.
People were saying like crazy, wait a second.
Mm-hmm.
My private insurance won't cover this. State insurance won't cover this. But a guy who murdered his wife gets taxpayer-funded transgender mm-hmm. surgery. I'm amazed that the transgender movement survived that, actually.
Well, first of all, when you talk about the transgender movement, you have what I would truly classify as a minority. It's a very small number of people. Many times, because of the way that they are forced to live their life and the rejection of their family, their inability to get jobs, they suffer proportionately a higher number of alcohol-related issues, drug-related issues, homelessness. You know, so this isn't a very organized lobby. These are not people who can advocate for themselves in the same way that other minorities can. So that's one case. The other issue with this entire thing is that it's a multi-pronged issue. Number one, if we all had universal health insurance, nobody would care that a prisoner was getting something that you weren't getting. Secondly,
well, that is the big issue.
That's the big issue.
I
mean, that's the major issue on everything. We're looking at that because this is a unique situation that's newsworthy. Secondly, do you believe that this is a medical situation? Do you believe? Yeah, and it is. I mean, I believe as well that there is enough medical evidence and psychological profiles by studies done by objective people to say that there are people who are born with the brain of one gender and a body of another. So why can't we just go ahead and fix that? And thirdly, there's just not enough access to folks who need this kind of treatment. So it's a three-pronged issue, and I get the outrage. I mean, I'm not happy
to pay for it either.
Yeah, but
it's not just that. Can I tell you, I consider, by the way, your number is 877-301-8970.
Hold on. So why? Give me the answer to that. If private insurance is not going to cover this Emerson student, Donnie Collins, why should the taxpayers of Massachusetts cover, and this is the part that is really upsetting, a murderer, a domestic violence killer in prison? So tell me why they should do that.
Would we cover his chemotherapy treatment?
Yes, would we? So what's
the difference? I mean, a lot of people like to think of the transgender operation, the reassignment surgery, as a cosmetic thing, which it's not.
But everybody covers chemotherapy. It's because private insurance doesn't cover this. I think that's the issue. It's like saying,
well, they should.
There's a lot of public feeling that it is a cosmetic thing. It's what you want to do, not what you need to do. And in fairness, I don't want to blame others. You don't remember this. I called you on the phone when I had I've called you on the phone a number of times.
A couple of years ago.
That wasn't me, by the way. I know who it was. A couple of years ago when I was doing a thing on NECN, I don't remember what, maybe it was the transgender bill of rights at the State House. I had two transgender people on the show. And I called you and I said what I'm going to say now. I consider myself a fairly progressive person. And I have to say there are moments when I'm not 100% there. The gay and lesbian thing, totally there. But you say to yourself, you know, it's hard. It's a new, it's like a, and you know, when I read this poll this morning, 76% of people, I was really heartened, 76% of mass voters support transgender rights bill, but 74% of transgender people say they've been discriminated against at work. So the reality is they haven't really been accepted or even close yet.
No, they're nowhere near being accepted. And it is difficult because it's not about, I think, a bigotry or discrimination. I think it's like some of the things in life you think are just set, and gender is one of them. I mean, yesterday on the show, you talked at length about gender roles in athletics. You know, you talked about the young woman
Thank
on the wrestling team.
Thank you for tuning in.
Thank you for tuning in every day. You know, and gender roles are what hold us back. I maintain that there are some transgender individuals who, if they were just accepted because they want to express their gender identity in a way that doesn't conform to our norms, wouldn't need to go through surgery and hormone replacement.
Well, you know what else I think it is, too? I mean, someone came up with a great line, which is so true, that things changed for acceptance of gays and lesbians when everybody started realizing their cousins, their teacher, whoever was gay and lesbian.
And we were already in places of power.
Yes,
like,
that's
like
a very good point.
Sleeper cells.
That's right. And you popped out.
And then we popped out.
Yeah. But most people don't know someone who's transgender.
Right.
There's someone in my life that I see professionally at a place where I go, the vets actually. And this person is about 6'3 and a woman. And you look at this person, you think this person used to be a man. Mm-hmm. And it's jarring.
Yes.
Because the person has big muscles and all that. And but then you keep going to the vet and you get to know the person, then you feel more comfortable.
And then it's just a person.
Yes, but I think that's
the issue.
Well, you know what's a perfect parallel? I've had this discussion with Sue and you too. Do you remember that the poll that was in the New York Times, unlike now when a majority supports gay marriage in this country, when a minority did? And what were the two categories of people who then, it's like 10 years ago, supported? One was young people because they didn't grow up with all the discrimination they know. And secondly were people who said, I know a gay person. And if they knew a gay person, by a significant majority, even 10 years ago, they supported gay marriage. So that's the deal on the transgender
When you actually meet a person who has done the transition to whatever degree they feel is necessary for themselves or that they can afford, and see how miserable they were and then how happy they become, that's all you need. And to see how authentically male someone is, and I mean authentically male, who was born in a female body. I mean, you know, Diego Sanchez, who was with AIDS Action and became the first openly transgender on Congress, serving with Barney Frank. Mm-hmm. You know, I never look at Diego and think, oh, that he used to be a girl. You know, Diego is authentically male, is in the right body, and is all that he needs to be.
Look at this kid from Emerson, Donnie Collins. Mm-hmm. Does he look like a man? Is he standing the way a man would stand on the front page of the Herald? You guys haven't seen it. And he talks about dealing with depression and dealing with just feeling horrible his whole life. I think it says something, though, that about young kids accepting this, that it is, even though Emerson, as you said before, is a very progressive school, that it's young people that are going to lead the way on this. Our numbers are 877-301-8970 if you want to talk about Donnie Collins, transgender in general, on Boston Public Radio. Let's go to, who are we going to?
We're going to Mike in Haverhill.
Thank you.
You're on with Jim, Marjorie, and Sue O'Connell. How you doing, Mike?
Thanks for having me.
Pleasure.
Studies have shown that people who people who wish to undergo the transgender reassignment, whether they undergo it or not, they're just as happy 10, 15, 20 years down the road as those who do. That is, if they do not undergo it, even though they want to, they're just as happy as those who do. Given the cost, and given that this is major surgery with significant risks, why should insurance companies pay for it?
How about it, Sue?
I'm about universal health care. There's really no argument to that. If everyone had health care, then you might have more money if you wanted to have the surgery. I believe the caller's correct.
Okay, I'm sorry, but my point is that whether people undergo the surgery or not, you're focused on the price.
Right.
The question is, you said that this makes these people happier, and I'm saying that studies show that it does not.
How about that, Sue?
I would honestly say—
Let her respond to him, Mike.
I haven't done a full check on everyone I know to make sure they had the full surgery, so I can't speak to that authenticity. However, you know, the caller is right, but it's also about the acceptance.
It's also about your personal
ideas of what's going to make you happy. For some, the body parts are important. You know, it's hard to describe, since I don't feel it, but it's been portrayed to me to look in the mirror and just, or to look at yourself and just hate yourself what you have. I mean, it's a burden. It's a
Mike, thanks
burden.
For the call.
This young man, Donnie Collins, that's on the front page of the paper today, talked about knowing in middle school he was in the wrong body. Bella English of the Boston Globe did a story a couple of weeks ago about twins. Remember the story?
Mm-hmm. Right,
when
I
forget if the girl became a boy or vice versa, but in any case, they were twins. And this child said, we're talking 4 and 5 years old, you know, that they knew that they were in the wrong place. And they went through the beginning of the transformation in their early teens, which I thought, my God, that's really young. But the doctors against it, in favor of it, were saying, no, it's really not that young.
No, I think that, I mean, I remember, I was thinking on the way over, I remember when I was in third grade, I was running around the house and I had on a buttoned pajama top and I had it unbuttoned and I had a letter opener in my mouth. I thought I was playing some kind of, and my mother comes running in and she grabs me and she sees me and she says, you can't run around with your shirt unbuttoned. What do you want to be, a boy? And I remember I looked at her and I said, no, I just want to do all the things that boys do. You know, so these are questions that we answer as kids ourselves, you know, and I think that people who have, I have never met anyone who was identified as transgender who decided to go back. I know there are people out there who have, but I've never met anyone.
It's pretty damn dramatic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, this the fundraising video we played you a couple of minutes ago from those potential frat brothers of Donnie Collins raised $16,000, more than twice, and they're donating the additional money. Let's go to Rhode Island, where Linda is on the phone with Sue O'Connell from Bay Windows. Hey, Linda.
Hi, how are you?
Excellent. Thanks for the call.
Good. I have an aunt who was married to someone, and he has wanted to become a woman. And I'm all for it. I think it's great. But I'm having a hard time because he has 3 children, and they were really young when he came out with this, and they don't know how to handle it. And for that matter, neither does my aunt in that whole situation. And it's really hard.
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult situation. It's akin to folks when they would come out. You know, it doesn't happen as often as it did, you know, in earlier times when people would get married and then come out as gay. I mean, I know that even with my own daughter, who is exposed to LGBT stuff and politics and Jim Browdy all the time, you know, I remember we had a long talk about the transgender issue, and she was afraid, as most kids are when you have difficult issues to explain, that I was going to be different,
exactly.
You know, or that she was going to be different, or that people around her would change. So, you know, when it's actually happening to a kid in their family or to a wife or a husband, it's a difficult thing. So counseling is the only thing that, you know, really can help them get through.
And Linda, thanks for the call. How available is counseling? What kind of support infrastructure exists for transgender or wannabe transgender people?
It depends on where they are. I mean, obviously, you're in the bigger cities. There's a lot more access. Fenway Community Health here in Boston. There's the Massachusetts Political Transgender Coalition, which has a website, and they reach out and help people. Even at Bay Windows, we still get phone calls from people who are in, you know, upstate Maine or down Maine looking for help. I mean, it's a very isolating. I can't think of anything that might be more isolating for a human being to have to go through.
If you said this before, I'm sorry, I didn't hear you, but how many people do we think are transgender?
I don't know that number, but
it's a small number.
I mean, and that's this panic about the legislation that's moving through the State House now about allowing public accommodations to transgender people. you know, this whole panic about the bathroom bill,
right.
Like, you know, transgender people who are by far overwhelmingly the ones who are attacked, overwhelmingly the ones who are murdered, are going to be, you know, marauding through ladies' rooms trying to attack women is just this crazy tilted idea.
Where is that now?
Well, what's it's the about this. They're starting to move forward on it. Obviously, the transgender civil rights bill passed, but public accommodations was taken out of it to allow the bill to go through.
Who's the point person on that deal?
Carl Ciartino's involved in it. There's like it's all the Democrats and Winslow who's running
Dan
for
Winslow.
Dan Winslow is the only Republican who voted for the transgender
State
rights
rep
bill.
Wants yep. to be U.S. Before you go, just one last question. Sue O'Connell from Bay Windows, the South End News. You will now stop whining about us taking your job.
Yes,
is that,
I will.
You will
I will
do that?
Indeed. Yes.
We've accommodated
thank you very
your
much.
Concerns. That takes care of it. It's the end of that.
Sue O'Connell, thank you very much for being with us. Coming up, this is a great story. A Brockton rapper is producing adult-only videos complete with cocaine T-shirts, thick wads of cash, and videos of him slapping women's behinds. And he's only 9 years old. Is this okay? We'll debate it up next on Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH.